up on this week's show, why USA fans should be concerned about CONCACAF games on pay-per-view, our thoughts about NBC's inconsistent TV coverage, how much of an impact match analysis has on TV ratings, what games to watch during the international break, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnar. Now, Kartik, probably some podcasts probably take a break over the international break and think, like, okay, there's not much to talk about. I mean, it's your humdrum international games. It's different this time, though. We've got World Cup qualifiers from the CONMEBOL region. So this is the first games, round one, featuring, I mean, the Brazils, the Argentinas, the Ecuadors, Colombias, etc. UEFA Nations League, yeah, there's some games on, some interesting games. Nothing really jumps out at me. And then there's actually, and this is something that's got flown under the radar, but we have the Euro 2020 playoffs. So we have countries such as the Republic of Ireland, Scotland, Serbia, Norway, trying to make the final four teams to make it into Euro 2020, which will be happening next summer. I know you're not a big fan of the international stage in general, but are there any matches of those that you might be interested in, Kartik?
No, I'm actually excited by the ability and opportunity I'm going to have this weekend to watch three WSL matches on NBCSN and additional NWSL matches elsewhere. So I'm actually going to focus on the women's game while the top men's pro leagues are on a break. So I'm actually not going to focus on internationals. I haven't thought about them. I don't know who's playing whom, but I am pretty geeked up, if that's the right term, for a big weekend of Women's Super League action. And there's been some great action in that league and cup competition, etc., in England's women's league this year, and just such an influx of players, of big name players, particularly Americans, this close season to England, that I'll give NBC credit. They got me pretty fired up with the Alex Morgan feature, and I'd already looked at the program schedule and saw they were showing Man City Chelsea, which is perhaps the biggest match of the season thus far on NBCSN. So that's what I'm going to be doing during the international break.
So it sounds like we're going to be doing opposite things, which should make it for a good podcast next week in terms of what you saw or what you enjoyed versus what I saw and enjoyed. For me personally, I mean, Norway against Serbia, that one, with it being a Euro 2020 playoff match, the first leg, I mean, Norway, of course, with Erling Haaland, but Serbia is always a difficult team to beat. The challenge, though, with these international matches, so actually across the board, Kartik, with soccer, is I'm getting tired of no fans in the stadium. Now, in Germany, in the Bundesliga, in different regions, we're seeing some fans, and we saw, I think it was like last Friday, was Union Berlin, or was it Mainz? No, actually, yeah, no, it was Union Berlin playing at home in their stadium, which is in a forest, and they had a large crowd there. And for me, I mean, no matter if it's internationals, if it's NWSL, if it's German League, you name it, I'm really starting to get a little bit tired of not seeing a lot of fans. And I understand why, but it's just not the same, Kartik. What about you?
I haven't really noticed. I mean, in some cases I noticed, right? In a Bayern game, the Bayern-Hertha Berlin match, I certainly noticed. The Liverpool-Villa match, I certainly noticed, because I thought Villa's fans would have been such a treat for them. Some other matches I've noticed, Leeds, whenever they play at home. But I guess it hasn't bothered me as much. But it has undoubtedly impacted results. So in order to get back to the kind of equilibrium that we're used to in world football and European football, club football, we need to have fans in the stands, because the results have become quite random. I mean, I don't think if there are fans at the Allianz Hertha Berlin is playing that kind of match against Bayern, right? That they're taking him to the to 90 plus five for Bayern to win that on a penalty, right? I think that's probably a straightforward Bayern victory, and there are many examples of that you could point to. In fact, the Bundesliga, the way teams are just playing since the restart have just played better when there are no. With the exception of, like you mentioned, Union Berlin, and we have some fans in Dortmund, we have some fans in Cologne, but I think that it's the thing that annoys me about it is results are becoming more random, and maybe that's a good thing, but it's just not something I'm comfortable with. That's why I want fans back in the stands.
Yeah, for me, it's especially international matches. You have some big matches coming up this next week. Some of them are friendly. So, for example, England against Wales, I mean, which is a rare treat. It's very rare that those two teams play against each other these days. So they play Thursday at Wembley in an empty stadium for a friendly. I mean, otherwise that match would be pretty close to a sellout normally. You've got even North Macedonia against Kosovo. You got two teams, neighboring countries, a lot of history. And something like that, even in a smaller stadium, maybe it's a 10,000-seat stadium, that would be electric. That's the part I'm missing. I mean, I'm enjoying the matches, and I'm still watching soccer from around the world, different leagues, you name it. But I'm missing that electric atmosphere. And even with the crowd noise pumped in, even with the soccer being pretty decent, you mean it's not the same, even from the commentating wise. You mean it is. It just seems that I think almost the commentators are missing that. You mean that you mean that noise and that factor. And and with the Premier League, it doesn't look like it's going to be anytime soon. Originally, we were thinking October it was going to be back, but now the Premier League has been talking to the government in the UK, and the UK government right now is saying, okay, yeah. Probably not until next year. We're looking at March or so, which just seems so far away. I don't know, Kartik. It's I'm enjoying the games. It's just not the same. And we'll get to that a little bit in the news section, because there's one piece of news that could have a result of that. I mean, it could be that fans might start not watching as many games because it's not as much fun as it used to be. Now, speaking of fun, Kartik, the Premier League is on fire. I mean, in terms of this season, so far for this season, thus far, they're averaging 3.79 goals per game, and it's on course to be a record. The previous record was 2.65 goals per game in the 1992-93 season, and I think that was when there were 22 teams in the Premier League.
Yeah. Yes.
And so it's on track. I mean, yes, okay. Who could have believed the Aston Villa Liverpool game? Who could have believed the Man City Leicester game? Who could have believed the Man United Spurs game? Those are just three examples. So there's been many, many more. But it's like the wild, wild west out there, Kartik. What's your take on the goal scoring? And you mean is it just the defense, or is it more than that?
Well, actually, two of those results were very believable because Spurs have outplayed Man United at various times in the last few seasons. And Leicester waxed Manchester City not that long ago with Pep as the manager. I think Vardy had a hat trick and he had another hat trick in this match. And Leicester are better than Manchester City. So I'm not sure that was a shock. Now, the Villa beating Liverpool to me is not a shock. I mean, I'll tell you how much I rate Villa. I have these selection decisions on my fantasy team because my fantasy team is so littered with Villa players. That's how much I rated their individual pieces. I think you and I have had this conversation offline that I just thought they had so many good players they wouldn't get relegated, and you felt that
I predicted they'd get relegated. Because of Dean Smith, the manager.
Right. Well, that's true,
I didn't think he had it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure he's the right manager for that. They have so many good pieces on that team, which is why I kind of thought, well, they might be a surprise package this season. But the goals, one thing. I think that there are more with VAR, there are more fouls that are being checked, and we're getting an extraordinary number of penalty decisions. And then I think The other thing is that you've got more teams in the Premier League pressing high and playing a high line, which is creating a situation where matches are more open. And the third factor is the fixture congestion is creating this situation where teams are getting worn down easily. They're having to rotate more. And the big teams in particular, I think, look really tired. So it's not a surprise to me. I know this isn't Premier League, but it's not a surprise to me. Bayern went out and bought a bunch of players on the transfer deadline day. They're looking like a spent force, as great as they were just a month ago. Looked like the best team we had seen in club football in a decade. Now they look spent because they've had to play so many matches in succession without a proper summer break. I'd make the same observation about Manchester City and about Liverpool. And in terms of Spurs, I think Mourinho's buying policy with Daniel Levy's help has been to recognize this situation and so stack certain positions so that they have the options to rotate. And this past week, they had a game on Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, and again on Sunday. So Spurs played four matches in 8 days. Is that correct? Is my math right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they, because of the way Mourinho, and I'm not a big Mourinho fan, I think everybody knows this, but the way he approached the transfer window, they were able to buy certain guys. So then now the teams that they're playing, the Southamptons and Manchester Uniteds, are so open because they're worn down, right? And they played too many matches. So I think it's that. And it's going to continue, right? Because the decision by the EFL to keep the League Cup this season, I thought this would be a year to do away with it, and to try and get us back on schedule in it to where we got through round four by the end of September or the beginning of October, first week of October, meant that these teams were playing an extraordinary number of matches, and there have been an extraordinary number of cup sets, if you will, in that competition. And unfortunately, you know, the cup specialist, Newport County, they almost got to the quarterfinals, lost in penalties. But I think that this is all weighed on the managers, and I think teams are just broken down. So that's more entertaining for us. But at some point, players might break down and get injured, and it might spoil the fun of the Premier League when we get to the festive period, which is supposed to be the best time of the year in that league. And unfortunately, all these star players are injured.
It's almost at a point, though, Kartik, where we're squashing in so many games in such a short amount of time. Just because, maybe, who knows if we'll finish the season. I mean, I think we will. But there's been outbreaks. Liverpool's had examples. The French squad. I mean, you go down the list. Whether it's in the States or whether it's in Europe, there have been incidents where people have caught coronavirus and had to go be quarantined. I guess that's another example too, in terms of Spurs having a lot of depth, having a very big squad, which Mourinho was actually criticizing when he was talking about Dele Alli and how he's got so many players and it's just hard to – his squad is too big. So maybe that is certainly a huge advantage here. I agree with you in terms of, tons of matches. For the viewer, for us watching it on streaming or on television, it's almost every couple of days. Match after match after match. And again, I'm enjoying it. Just missing that crowd component. But what about the analysis from this past weekend with the Premier League? And in the past, we've criticised NBC Sports for being inconsistent. Sometimes it's good, sometimes not so good. What did you see from this past weekend? What were some of the differences, if any?
Yeah, so I had a friend who follows Leeds very closely and hasn't watched the Premier League for years because Leeds haven't been in the Premier League, and was kind of shocked by by how poor he thought Tim Howard was and how predictable and stale the questions Rebecca Lowe were asking was. He liked Robbie Earls, so that's a plus. That's his opinion. I mean, that's not necessarily my opinion. I felt like also they were they're just like – very, very shallow in their analysis. So I got very unhappy, and I know I put it on Twitter and there was various reactions to it about Rebecca Lowe's what I believe was a cheap shot at Paul Pogba when she said when Robbie Earl said something about Pogba needs to be at his best. This was pregame and we know he had a terrible match. So but you could say that with hindsight. But pre-match, Robbie Earl says he needs to be at his best. He needs to be doing this today. And she makes a very snide remark. When has he ever been at his best? You know, just a cheap shot, which is a classic Sky Sports tactic and a classic narrative now developing in the English media. I can point to many games where Pogba has been at his best. I can point to the time, the previous meeting between those two teams, those two sides. Last year when Pogba got put on, he's coming off an injury. It's right after the COVID break, right? In minute 60 or so, Spurs had dominated, but they had only taken a 1-0 lead. And then once Pogba came on, the game settled and Manchester United controlled it. They got that late penalty, which Bruno Fernandes converted. But just the most recent history between these two clubs, that was the case. And I think of countless matches, especially the match where Manchester City were trying to clinch the Premier League title. I think everybody remembers that against United. Pogba bossed that game. He was better than any Man City player. Man City had 100 points that season. So it was just absolutely, I thought, uncalled for. And it just goes back to, I don't think Rebecca Lowe would have done that 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's part of them adopting these very sensational Sky-related narratives to what they do. Arlo White missed a couple calls in the United-Spurs game. I'm not going to belabor that because I think generally he's very, very good with that. He's 99% right, but it was just I think a couple things happened quickly in that match. And it was all in the first half, by the way, first 20 minutes when it was frantic. And he of course, would correct himself quickly. The post-match analysis after that match was almost completely about Manchester United and where did they go off, this, that. I mean, I can imagine being a Spurs supporter in the U.S., and there were a lot of Spurs supporters in the U.S., thinking, what are you going to talk about the fact that that Mourinho made this decision to play Aurier instead of Doherty, and how that factored into it? How about the three-man midfield of Ndombele, Sissoko, and Hoiberg dominating, and the way the balance was in that midfield? They didn't talk about any of that stuff. Or if they did, they talked about it in passing. They were focused on United. So I was pretty stunned by that. And then the Villa Liverpool game, same thing. It was almost like they did go to the Ollie Watkins interview with Sky. They did talk to Dean Smith, but other than that, it was all about Liverpool, right? The entire pregame and post-match. And as I said, Villa has a lot of good players. Now, they underperformed last year, and we know their net spend was the highest in the Premier League last season. People may have forgotten that. So that tells you the quality of player they bought, even though they almost got relegated. And then they've just added to that this season, and then getting Ross Barkley in on loan. There wasn't enough analysis about Villa in terms of and it was just platitudes. And the other thing that bothers me is that, and it's not just NBC, it's a lot of people who cover the Premier League. Ollie Watkins signs from Brentford. Chris, you and I have watched the guy the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I thought it was a can't-miss signing. And I'm shocked. And obviously has a relationship with Dean Smith, but I'm surprised another Premier League team didn't make that move as soon as Brentford lost in the playoff final to Fulham. When you watch NBC or you watch Sky, it's like they don't know who this guy is. And they're not able to analyze his game properly. And they're not able to analyze the Leeds players who played so well in the championship. Like Calvin Phillips was such an important part of their team the last 2 years. And he's a Yorkshire boy. He's from the Leeds area. And they haven't analyzed his role in that team at all because they haven't seen him play, it seems like. So I'm frustrated. It's not just NBC. I think ever since Leicester won the title, I thought there would – and then Wolves comes into the league and finishes seventh the first year they're in. Sheffield United comes into the league, finishes in the top half the first year they're up. Leeds is going to finish in the top half this year. I thought there would be more understanding of who plays in the championship, how good these guys potentially are when clubs come up or players are bought out of the championship. But it seems like that's missing from the analysis. And Chris, missing that in the analysis means with sides like Villa, you miss a big piece of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to properly analyze them without knowing that stuff.
I think one of the things, Kartik, is that this has to be a conscious effort on NBC's part. Because, I mean, you watch a broadcast, especially on a Sunday, and maybe Sunday's a little bit more laid back than, say, a Saturday in terms of what they're talking about. It's very much the whole My Premier League morning. It's more of an experience. So, I mean, I don't know if you caught this one, but there was, and they spent probably a couple of minutes on it at least, talking to Ola White and Lee Dixon, not about tactics, but about candy, about caterpillars, which they were talking about that for a couple of minutes, about like, you know, you're just making fun of it, having a little bit of a laugh, having a joke, which is okay. But then, I mean, you watch on the Sunday morning and they're asking for people to send pictures in, and it's pictures of breakfast. It's pictures of, I don't know, baked beans on toast or grits and eggs, and it's pictures of your dog. And it's really all about the experience. It's really all about trying to make a connection with the audience, and it's a feel-good sitting down soccer moms, maybe soccer dads, kind of just one big family. I think, to be honest with you, Kartik, I think a lot of this is tainted by Men in Blazers. Is kind of that kind of like, ha ha ha, soccer isn't as fun, you know, I mean, isn't as goofy, isn't as stupid, or whatever it is. That seems to be, I mean, that's what they're going after. I mean, and we've talked about this too, and we've argued about this too, that the numbers, for the most part, have plateaued. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they have reached highs. So they've, I think, last season they had what, the highest rated Premier League match of all time on U.S. television. It was one game, which was like what, 1.5 or 1.6 million, big number. They have had higher points, but for the most part, I think. Yeah, there's no way that they're going to be what we want them to be, which is more tactically aware, which is more more hardcore. I think that time is over, and especially with Kyle leaving and Tim coming in, and Tim's good. He's just very different. He's no Kyle Martino. He's a completely different style, and I think Tim. It's a difficult position to be in, that position where you have to really have knowledge of all 20 teams and the players and the championship and other leagues. I mean, as a professional in a studio, you mean that person needs to know that stuff. I mean, you and I and a lot of the listeners probably have just as much knowledge as some of the talent out there, or sometimes even more so. We might watch more matches than the talent does. But I think that's where we're at, Kartik. And it's one of those things that maybe in future podcasts we won't spend as much time on NBC Sports, just because I don't think it's going to change. For me personally, it makes me think moving forward, maybe just I'm just going to spend more time watching the matches and maybe not hoping for some great analysis pre-match, halftime, or post-match, because I don't think I'm going to get it.
Yeah, so I agree with all of that. I hadn't thought about the Men in Blazers angle. I think that's absolutely right. The thing I would point out is that Robbie Musto is really well versed in what happens in other leagues, right? He's aware of continental football. Not having him on the transfer deadline show when there are all these players moving from the continent into England, I maybe there was another explanation that I missed as to why he wasn't there, but that stunned me, because in the past, obviously, Kyle Martino worked for them in the past. They had Martino, Earl, and Musto on these transfer deadline specials. That all having been said, I think Tim Howard really was good on Monday. And in a deeper dive situation where he's able to – Rebecca says, well, what do you think about Fulham? He's able to go through piece by piece the team and kind of analyze it. He doesn't – maybe he's not good doing it pre and post match, or he's not given the opportunity. It's more likely the latter, because I turned a new leaf on him watching on Monday, saying, he's making some really good points about some of the teams that I feel like they don't cover very well. The Villas, the Sheffield Uniteds, the West Broms. He has a deeper knowledge. And West Brom, obviously, Tim Howard has a very close relationship with Slaven Bilic, so a personal relationship. So he has more insight into that club than maybe most analysts would. But that's still the point being – I saw his utility on the transfer deadline show, and I'm not seeing his utility when they actually broadcast matches. So that's another concern. And
let me just chime in real fast. I mean, you look at the work that he did for TNT and BR Football on the Champions League, and the analysis he gave there versus what he's doing for NBC on a normal weekend when it is match days. It's two extremes, Kartik. Like, the one extreme is the TNT BR Football, where it's laughing, joking, laid back. It's maybe you talking about basketball and about Neymar, and then talking about, like, hey, you mean it's very emotion driven. And then on the NBC side, it tries to be very analytical or kind of a little bit deeper, thinking about it, talking about it. So that part might be part of it too, where it's just a transition where it's a different style, and it's going to take some time to get him into that mix where he's going to feel more comfortable. But yeah, it's a completely different. So for him, it's definitely an adjustment.
Yeah, and so I thought he was quite good on Monday. Still, in spite of how good Howard was, and he was good, I got more out of the 1 hour on ESPN, the special K Murray hosted with Alexis Nunez, hosting a little mini studio in London with the likes of Stuart Robson on there. They were analyzing done deals and deals that were about to get over the line, like Thomas Partey. They were not speculating mindlessly and endlessly like Sky Sports. I mean, even the few times Rebecca Lowe threw to Sky Sports, I think the NBC producers, right, Pierre Moussa and a company, they probably yanked it back really quickly. They did yank it back really quickly. I think it was because they threw it to Sky Sports, and they were doing and saying absolutely nothing. It was nonsense. And Harry Redknapp giving this horrible analysis. So, yeah. You know, just to complete what I watched this week, ESPN FC, with the addition now of Danny Higginbotham and Steve Cherundolo, in addition to their other established analysts that they have, the Gab Marcottis and the Julian Lorenzes, and obviously Craig Burley, Stuart Robson, et cetera, and Steve Nichol has been fantastic. Steve Nichol and Shaka Hislop have been fantastic of late, as they normally are. And then with Dan Thomas hosting the days he's not there, it's either Kay Murray or Seb Salazar. They are essentially filling a bunch of voids in my football viewing. And I know I say this every year, and I've said this ever since we switched to this format of the show, that I can't live without ESPN FC, but I really can't now. And they just keep gearing up to the point where I think every really high level English language analyst that's available is either on CBS's Champions League coverage or on ESPN FC on television now. Which is pretty remarkable, because mm-hmm. they just keep adding people. Higginbotham being on the show recently has been a another welcome addition. I didn't think they could raise the bar even higher, and they did. And by the way, he's as good as a studio guy as he is as a co-commentator, yeah. And he's shown that on this program. So I'm loving it. Steve Cherundolo is actually very good. I wasn't sure if he was media trained when obviously ESPN brought him in to aid with the Bundesliga coverage, but he has turned out to be very good as well.
Yeah, and Steve Cherundolo, definitely a coach for the future. I can see him probably getting involved more in the coaching side, but he is very good at the at reading a game and communicating, you mean, kind of his analysis. Just a couple of things, some other things I watched this past week, Kartik. Lazio against Inter, which was a good game. It was competitive. Steve Banyard and Tony DiRigo on the call for this one. But you mentioned at the top of this program talking about VAR and how VAR is causing more goals to be scored. It's also causing more red cards for just silly stuff. I mean, just kind of, you mean, a player gets up or gets fouled and then kind of slaps a player in the face, like, just nonchalantly, nothing violent. You mean it goes to VAR, that player is sent off. You mean 10 minutes later, something else happens. A player comes out and raises his hand. That player gets sent off. Then we watch Martial in the Man United Spurs game. You mean he gets sent off just for the most, just, I wouldn't say innocent, but for just hardly anything. It shouldn't be a red card. It is a red card. That's the rules. So the referee's making the right decision. and VAR is helping with that. But for the players, the footballers, I mean, they need to know, you mean, to resist that, even if, you mean, the tempers are flaring. You mean, don't do stuff like that, because, you mean, chances are these days VAR is going to catch it, even if the referee misses it. And that's the only downside I see to Serie A and to that game, Lazio-Inter especially, is a lot of that stuff happening. And of course, when you got Vidal playing and other characters, it is a very physical league, and there's a lot of fouling, and unfortunately it actually takes away from the football, in my opinion. And then let me see, the other thing I want to mention too, just real fast before we go to the TV streaming news segment, is I finished Take Us Home, Leeds United season 2, the second episode, which is on Amazon Prime Video. And for anyone who hasn't watched it yet, I highly recommend it. It's really hard to not be impressed by this team, the players and the coach. Leeds, as you can see, I mean, we know it, spoiler here, but we know that Leeds gets promoted to the Premier League. But just going behind the scenes, seeing that, just got a lot of time and respect for the Leeds players. It's not a team full of superstars. It's mostly very hard-working footballers, a lot of them journeymen, and also the passionate fan base. And it's really, really good documentary. I preferred this one to the Spurs one, the All or Nothing. That's just me personally, but I would highly recommend that. That's on Amazon Prime. Kartik, what about you? Anything else before we move on?
Yeah, I enjoyed watching, and I want to thank ESPN again for bringing us an Atalanta game on television, Atalanta match on Sunday morning. I mean, I slept through most of it, but and the match was pretty much over when I woke up. But no,
okay.
So I went back and watched it again, and Atalanta is selling players on, as we've seen in this transfer window, a couple guys moving to the Premier League, and they are continuing to get better. So I think they're going to finish in the top four again this season for the third straight year. They are they have scored 11 goals in 3 matches thus far this season in Serie A and league competition, and they are so good to watch. And so it's one of these things, Chris, whenever I see that ESPN is showing an Atalanta game, it can be at 6:15 in the morning, as it was this time, I will DVR it, and I will make sure I watch the thing in its entirety. They are unbelievable entertainment. I mean, what a team. We know this can't last forever. We know that they're doing it largely, speak about journeyman players. Atalanta is doing this largely with older journeyman players. Not that dissimilar, actually, from Bielsa and Leeds in some ways, although some of Leeds' guys are younger journeymen. But they've just been a pleasure to watch. And then the other thing I would talk about is that even in my political circles, and I think, as I mentioned last week on the podcast, I'm very active in the campaign this year, and in fact have just come back from the supervisor of elections office. There is increasing conversation among sports fans, not necessarily hardcore soccer fans, about Borussia Dortmund and wanting to watch that team, because I think ESPN has promoted this idea in mainstream channels that this is where all the young great players go to develop. And so I'm fielding questions from political person today. We're talking about the Heat and what had happened yesterday and Miami Hurricanes, and I'm just making conversation. He's like, oh yeah, you're a soccer guy. What do you think about Bellingham and Gio Reyna and Haaland and Borussia Dortmund? And it's because ESPN is pumping this out every week. So I don't know if Dortmund's in a position where they're going to be able to really take advantage of it in the U.S. market, but ESPN is doing a lot of the marketing for them that Fox never did when they had Pulisic and Jadon Sancho and Dembele. Well, they still have Sancho, right? Mm-hmm. But when they first got Sancho and Dembele, and even, you know, going further back when they developed Mario Götze and sold him out at 20 or 21, and Robert Lewandowski and all these young players, it's pretty remarkable that that's becoming a mainstream thing. And I think, Chris, that might be true in the UK also, right? I think a lot of people are talking about Borussia Dortmund there as well, if I'm not mistaken. So Dortmund might be in a position in the U.S. Specifically because of ESPN's promotion of them, and because they have Reyna and that's the hook into the story. They then talk about Haaland and Bellingham and all these other guys that they're becoming very mainstream, surprisingly enough.
It's a fun team to watch. I mean, you look at world football in as a whole, and you kind of think of, okay, who's your top three most fun teams to watch? And I would put Dortmund in there, probably number one or number two, Atalanta. And then last season, there would have been Liverpool. But this season, that number three, I'm not so sure yet. You mean as far as like which team that is? That's, I mean, Spurs, you mean in many ways is, well,
of course it could be,
but inconsistent. Like sometimes they're fun, other times it's just like dire. But yeah, so Dortmund for sure. And I think that's the focus that ESPN has and the ability that they have. I mean, doing a story on SportsCenter on a Sunday morning about Gio Reyna, that's going to get more reach, get into more homes, and get into more of the mainstream discussion, so people know who he is, know who the team is, and learn more about that. It takes time, but that strategy, even though all the games are on streaming, right, that strategy is really, really well done.
But these are young millennial Democratic Party politicos, so they're kind of into the streaming thing anyway. They all have ESPN Plus, so for them, watching Dortmund isn't labor intensive. For you and I, it may be, well, especially for me. I mean, you've kind of adjusted the streaming thing better than me. For me, it's like it's labor intensive. I mean, I've watched every Dortmund match, but it's like at 9:30 my time, I'm going on to ESPN Plus. I'm pulling the match and watching it at the same time as I'm flipping back with a Premier League match or another Bundesliga match. But for tech savvy youngsters, they're on it.
All right. Speaking of tech savvy youngsters, for the TV news section, Kartik, I'm going to read the second piece of news, and I'll give you a chance to look at the first piece of news to give everyone a recap on that because I think it's pretty interesting. But so leading off on the TV streaming news, and that is season two of Ted Lasso is in the writing stage. So that's great news for fans of this show, the TV series, which has been a big hit on Apple TV Plus. It's been a feel-good hit, probably the feel-good hit of the late summer for Apple TV Plus. I don't think anyone expected how well-received the show has been. I didn't watch the whole series, but so when I watched it, the first three or four episodes, it was warming up to me as it went along, and I think by the end of it, I didn't finish it all. I should finish it all. But by the end of it, I saw like episode three, I think it was, I was starting to warm up to the character of Ted Lasso, where you started to feel more for the person, learn more about him, and have a better understanding that he wasn't just a dumb guy, college football coach, just didn't know anything about soccer. There was a lot more to him than meets the eye. And in the series, you watched it, but the series goes more in depth there. So season two, no release date yet, but it's currently in the writing stage, and it looks very good, that very likely that that's going to happen. Now, Kartik, moving on to your piece of news.
Yeah, so we have seen Premier League viewership down on Sky Sports as blanket coverage. This idea of having a game at kickoff at noon, British Standard Time 2, then 4:30, then in prime time 7:30 or 8. There's been an oversaturation, the Daily Mail reports, of matches, which has led to, I think, some very natural burnout. I've experienced it myself, right? And I'll be honest with you, okay? If Liverpool, the other day on Sunday, if Liverpool is playing someone other than Aston Villa, I'm probably getting on with my day. I've actually, as I think I've said, I don't know, did I say it on air or off air about my fantasy team? And that since Bournemouth's out of the league now, I've just gone big into Villa because I think they have so many great individual pieces that I sat and watched that game for that reason. But I was burnt out by that time, by that point. And it was the same thing the previous day with it was Newcastle, right, that played late. I mean,
Newcastle against Burnley.
Yeah, I can completely relate to it, that the burnout is happening. So you're seeing some TV numbers come down. Now, the other thing to understand with this, Chris, which I think, again, and I know you and I keep emphasizing this for American listeners, but they don't necessarily remember this or know this, is that they're not accustomed to having this many matches on television in the United Kingdom. They're accustomed to not having no matches in the 3 p.m. British Standard Time a time slot, and having limited matches here and there bracketing that. So this has been, because of no crowds in the stadium, there has been an oversaturation of football on UK television, of Premier League football specifically. So that has led to some burnout. I think that's pretty natural. That's why I don't know how these college football fans in the United States do it. They get up. I mean, I guess it's a short season, right? It's not like our sport, which is year-round, basically, with the exception of the summer. But they get up at 9 o'clock and watch college game day, and they're up until the last game on the West Coast at 2 a.m. Eastern time. But yeah, I'm not surprised by this, honestly. I would have expected it eventually. Yeah. And I don't think this was supposed to go on this long is the key thing. I don't think Sky and BT and Amazon and the BBC, who have shown some matches free to air, right, in the midst of this, expected in mid-October we would still be going with this with no end in sight.
Right. And the report says that the average viewership is down, and this is arguably no cause for concern. It goes on to say that the 12 matches initially scheduled for broadcast by Sky Sports were up by a modest 8% when compared to last season. This would indicate that the figures are being dragged down by matches with lower interest, which typically would not have been shown live. So like a Newcastle against a Burnley, as just one example, there's been quite a few games where it's been a late game. Usually the late game on the Saturday is of lesser interest this season. It's of interest, but it's featuring some of the smaller clubs, not the top six. But I had a laugh before, Kartik, when you mentioned that, just because it's one of those things that we've been used to this since, 2006, where I would count the number of hours I spend watching television. Sometimes it'd be like a 10-hour day or like a 9-hour day or 12-hour day of watching just nonstop soccer. And I've been doing this now for, 14 years at least, pretty much every weekend, and of course weekdays now. But for UK viewers, this is quite different. And I think the other part of it, though, too, is that it's more likely that a US soccer fan is going to watch consecutive games throughout a weekend. So it could be, whichever teams are playing. I mean, the early kickoff, the midday kickoff, and later in that afternoon kickoff. Now, a UK fan, I would say, would be more likely to watch his or her team. So if it's Liverpool against Aston Villa, that person may have very little interest or might have it on in the background, but probably is not going to watch Man United against Spurs. He or she might be out going shopping or doing whatever, and then coming back and then watching Liverpool against Aston Villa. So that's the other part of it too, is that it's a different type of audience. At the same time though, Kartik, this is something we've been hearing from UK readers, listeners and viewers since 2005, since World Soccer Talk launched, is like, oh my gosh, I wish I could have as much access to all these games as you do in America. They have the access now, Kartik, but the numbers are down. So again, I think the crowd factor is something that is hard to measure as far as kind of lesser of an interest in some games. But I just have to laugh, partly because they've finally gotten what they wanted and they're not watching in large numbers. And I mean, there's a whole host of different reasons for that. You mentioned a few, I mentioned a few, but I just find that a little bit funny.
Yeah, one other thing, though. The Premier League had been actively looking at that 8 o'clock British Standard it would be 8 o'clock. Yeah. 8 o'clock British Standard Time video window on Saturdays yep. for matches, and thinking that would be an essential part of maybe the next television contract. And based on this, I don't know if it changes their thinking on it, but it can't help. It doesn't further it for sure. That maybe that's a bit much. And even for international audiences, maybe that time slot doesn't align well. So I'm interested to see what happens to that when the six packages that will be bid on very soon domestically. Although, again, I don't know if COVID and all of this changes the timeline for rights deals, but we assume those six packages, the tender will go out very soon. We're in year two of this three-year cycle, which involves BT, Sky, and Amazon Prime. So it technically should go out toward the end of the season if that affects it.
Yeah, the other thing too, this is brand new for the Premier League. So this is the first time ever that you've had staggered kickoffs where you normally would have like, what, five or six games at 10 o'clock to noon Eastern time. Now you're having games that are spread across the entire weekend. La Liga has been doing this for a few years. You mean they've had, for the most part, sometimes you have games that double up, but for the most part, games kick off on a Friday evening and go all the way through till Monday evening, and it's staggered for the most part. The Bundesliga tried it with Mondays, and there are some Monday games this season, but not as many as previous seasons. Serie A is very much, I mean, most of the games are on Sundays. There's some games on Saturdays, but there's a whole bunch of games happening at the same time. So that's the other new component of this too, is that for the Premier League, this is a good test to say, okay, how much of an appeal is there for some of the other teams? Some of the, say, I don't know, a Brighton against Everton at a 10 a.m. Eastern time on a Saturday. How is that going to do when there's no other games happening? Will people gravitate to that game and watch it in the UK? And again, looking at this report and looking at the numbers, there's not a huge boost. So, and again, too, I mean, you're looking at the big six, you're looking at the Man United's, Arsenal's, Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs, Man City to a certain extent, but you're looking at large fan bases. You're looking at same thing in the States. You mean, you take those clubs and that makes up most of the Premier League viewers. And of course, there's tons of viewers that watch and follow Newcastle and Burnley and Everton and other clubs. But the majority of it is the big six. And in previous years, that was really kind of what drove the TV viewership, was those big games. All right, Kartik, TV ratings. I'm working on a column this week, which will have all of the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com. Just want to mention one of them, and that's Leeds United against Man City. On NBC, and we're still awaiting the number from Telemundo, but for NBC, this one got 811,000 viewers, and actually, was it on Telemundo or was it Universo? It might have been Universo, but we'll get the final number on that one and then report that at worldsoccertalk.com. Moving on to listener mailbag, first up is FTC United. With the Champions League on CBS Sports, originally not supposed to have taken over until the 2021-22 season, will we be getting another year of most games on All Access, or will we get more matches on TV, CBS Sports Network maybe, or the local CBS station? So the answer to this question would be that every single game is on CBS All Access, no matter what. So both Champions League and the Europa League. And FTC United is correct in saying that originally CBS Sports was supposed to start their coverage next season. This would have been Turner Sports' last season until they basically gave up on the rights. So for this season, I asked CBS Sports a few months ago, okay, what about games on television? And they've said that they've gone ahead and they've pretty much the entire season, they've already they've made commitments. They've got golf, they've got a whole bunch of other sports, college football, you name it, tons of sports. And they've committed to actually showing those programs on CBS, the big CBS, the CBS over the air. So it would be not many games of the Champions League on those CBS stations this season. Now, next season is a different story. Next season, if CBS wanted to, they could go ahead and put more of the games on the over-the-air local CBS station. And again, so this season we'll get some CBS Sports Network games, maybe a couple of CBS over-the-air, but next season we'll see a difference there. Mike says, can we talk about CBS's Champions League studio coverage? Jamie Carragher is, well, I've come to understand the word daft. him and Micah Richards completely disrespecting any team that isn't Premier League and any competition involving a Premier League club. The UEFA post-game was disrespectful. So, okay, the Super Cup, I guess. Yeah, I did watch the Super Cup game and I watched the analysis, but I didn't watch it as closely as I would with the Champions League just because I'm not into the Super Cup as much. I mean, I don't value it as a massive trophy. You mean, yes, it's kind of contrived. You mean, I mean, I enjoyed watching the match itself, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to the coverage as I normally do. What about you, Kartik? Did you hone in on that?
Yeah, and I think the issue with Carragher is he doesn't know much about the teams outside of England or Spain. I would say he does seem to have some grasp of La Liga, but he doesn't know the teams in Italy, France, or Germany, or other continental sides, I'm assuming, too, once we get to the group stage this season. So I think he's relied heavily on the reputation and history of the clubs and doesn't really have the kind of grounding in the players that are playing for those teams unless they played in the Premier League or they played for one of the big teams in Spain. So I actually kind of agree with that, and I noticed that in the analysis of Sevilla, that it's all kind of boiled down to guys that have played at other clubs in the past, even if it's other clubs in Spain, right? Your perceived three bigger clubs in Spain, and a lot of analysis of Jesus Navas because he played at Manchester City, right? Mm-hmm. So that's that I've noticed, and then with Bayern, I think they got more comfortable as the tournament went on, but I do think that there were some clear blind spots in terms of Bayern when they started, and some very clear blind spots with PSG and Lyon when they started. So that I agree with. I do think this is generally a problem in English language. I mean, I call it out all the time. I mean, I on Twitter the other day, I hammered Sky for having people who didn't know anything about any continental league on their transfer deadline coverage. That basically, these guys could all be random players, the guys coming from Serie A or the Bundesliga. They don't know anything about them, and they don't make an effort to know anything about them. And I would also add the championship to that analysis. So I don't think Carragher and Richards are any worse than anyone else. It's just the people who are kind of more cosmopolitan in their outlooks and are British tend to all be on that ESPN FC show. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, they get the guys who really know their stuff, like the Stuart Robsons, can do that.
Well, it's funny too, because if you watch BT Sport, you'll see more of the Owen Hargreaves, or in the past, Rafa Honigstein, or Andy Brassell, or others who are definitely extremely cosmopolitan.
Hargreaves would be very good, I think.
Yeah, where they can talk about experience playing in those leagues, but also experience knowing those players inside and out. And that's the difference, right? BT Sport to me was more of a probably something that we would like. You mean you and I would like, and a lot of our listeners would appeal to more of that. And then the Sky Sports has become very much like the NBC Sports, where it is more mainstream, laughing, joking, and having fun, but not your hardcore analysis. So yeah, there's a lot in common.
Owen Hargreaves is a great suggestion, though, for CBS. Maybe they'll think about that one, because he has an expertise on the Bundesliga. Very few former players in the English language that are now in punditry have. He would be very good.
And if you remember, too, I think wasn't Owen Hargreaves one of the ones they tried out on Turner, CBS?
Turner, right.
Turner BR Football. Yeah. And then they really kind of underutilized him. And then they kind of came in with their, I guess their agent was able to bring in Tim Howard, Moadu, and was it Carlos Bocanegra?
He has a different agent. So it would be Holden and Nash and Howard and Adu. Yeah.
Bill says, I am listening to the new podcast and wanted to ask why so you think Peacock doesn't have the studio show to replay. I work during the day, so couldn't see any of Monday's studio shows, which is silly. At least Peacock is moving in the right direction. So, yeah. So if you do want to watch post-match, I mean, I guess Goalzone is there, I believe, maybe on the replays. It's not easy to find it. I mean, normally, like, so for me, for example, if I DVR on Fubo and DVR, say, Liverpool against Aston Villa, and it's on NBCSN, It will tape it for, I mean, post-match too. So I'll get the 30 minutes to an hour post-match, and I'll be able to watch that. With Peacock, it seems to be pretty much the game. And once the game's done, that's it. So you miss out on seeing that studio analysis. You're not missing much right at the second, Kartik. Oh, although you did miss the whole Sky Sports with Roy Keane and Jurgen Klopp and that incident a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, Bill, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there needs to be a better way to go ahead and have those studio shows, when they're on Peacock, available to Peacock subscribers. I agree with that. Ian O'Neill says, I was wondering what you'd think about Liga MX, who are looking for stable, rich owners, expanding by absorbing ambitious USL clubs in the border states. If MLS won't expand in large cities like San Diego or San Antonio, this would seem like a good idea, but it may also be a dangerous one. How would Liga MX then avoid the temptation of adding a club in LA? This seems like deja vu, Kartik. Right.
Yeah, obviously there was that controversy many moons ago. I think before many of our listeners were following soccer, some of them may not have even been born, where Liga MX at that time, the League One and the Liga Uno and the FMF tried to put a team in Los Angeles. There was interest in doing that, and FIFA has made it clear that they cannot cross the border with Major League Soccer in place, right, as a established first division in the United States. Now, hypothetically, if there were no sanctioned first division in the United States, they could do it. Hence why Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, who were actually in second division, well, Montreal and Vancouver were in a sanctioned second division league in the United States, were able to then be in a first division league in the United States. There may come a time, and there's a lot of whispers about this, where if the CAN-PL continues to evolve, right now it's at kind of a Division II level. If the Canadian Premier League ever became a first division league, either those clubs that are in MLS would be grandfathered in, or they would be booted out, or they'd be grandfathered in with the caveat, like the Welsh clubs in the English system, that they cannot qualify for continental competitions via Wales or via Canada in this case. So I don't know if our listeners realize this. I know you're well aware of this, Chris, obviously, but Wales does have its own qualifier for European for the UEFA or for Europa League every year. And Swansea, Newport, Wrexham and Cardiff are ineligible. So it would be the same sort of thing here if it ever came to this. And also we've seen it just now, Ottawa kicked out of USL, which was a U.S. sanctioned league, because CONCACAF deemed that Ottawa had a comparable league in their own country playing, which was the Canadian Premier League, and they should not remain in a U.S. league, a U.S.-based league. So in short, it can't happen.
Yeah, and going back to Ian's question, yeah, it's not going to happen anytime in the future. Also, because you mean once you allow that to happen, then you've got La Liga saying like, "Hey, if Liga MX can go ahead and move into the States and have clubs playing in a Mexican league, then you mean La Liga can move in and have games being played here. What's the difference?" The reason I mentioned deja vu, I thought you were going to go down the path of Chivas USA. Of being a club owned by Liga MX owners of a club, going into Major League Soccer and starting up a Major League Soccer team in Los Angeles area, Chivas USA, which only lasted a few years, but Bob Bradley was coach. That seems like so long ago.
Yeah, and Precky coached them. I mean, they had Jesse Marsh played for them. Yeah, maybe the definitely the best American coach out there now.
Yeah,
other than Bradley himself, right? Those are the two best American coaches, Bradley and Marsh.
Chris Guardino says, I have a question for Chris or Kartik. Actually, this is probably more of a Kartik question about MLS TV rights heading into the playoffs as being a Sounders supporter. My question to you, Kartik, is with both the Big Ten and Pac-12 of college football starting up in a few weeks, do you think MLS will move playoff games to midweek so that they can get games on ESPN and FS1? The reason why I ask is because I have a older relative who is a big Sounders supporter, but she does not have cable and relies on Amazon Prime Video on her tablet to watch Sounders matches produced locally. Amazon has told her that unless the match is being shown on local TV in the Seattle area, Amazon cannot stream matches that are on national TV. I'm thinking about adding her to my Fubo profile to offset this problem so she can watch the playoff matches that way, and would like to know if that is a good idea. Any advice would be helpful. So,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to chime in too. I mean, the other option too, if the games are on, well, no, I was going to say ESPN or FS1. I was going to say an HD antenna, indoor antenna, but that's not going to work. So, yeah, the Fubo profile might be a better option, is actually having an account for her or a profile for her so she could watch matches. But going back to the Big Ten and Pac 12, do you think the games might be moved to midweek, Kartik?
Yes, I think absolutely, because there's going to be a condensed number of games at that point. And part of the reason MLS had moved their playoffs up had been to avoid those conflicts. And so I think you're going to have maybe Thursday games, Wednesday, a lot of Wednesday, Thursday games, and maybe they're bumped to – no – they're going to have to do that, because the other option would be to bump them to ESPN News or FS2, which I think in this day and age is unacceptable, right?
Yeah. Yeah, especially under this current deal they've got. So moving on, next is Eric. And Eric says, Chris, you talk about Rebecca Lowe asking the same question over and over. How many times have I heard enjoy your football? And said without much enthusiasm last week, Kartik, but great show. So
I must have been in a cranky mood last week.
It was a bit of a downer at the end there, Kartik, last week. It was kind of like, ugh. But going back to Eric's point, enjoy your football is a tagline. It's a mantra. It's not a question that we ask every episode. And that was the thing about Rebecca Lowe for the last 6 or 7 years, asking a lot of the similar questions and getting a lot of similar responses out of the two Robbies especially. All right, Kartik, we're going to have to do a good enjoy your football this week. One more question, and this is from Dave. Dave says, on the recent podcast, you were talking about delays of broadcasts on streaming services. I've noticed something even crazier. I was watching a game on ESPN Plus on my Apple TV, and at one point, I got up to get something from the kitchen, not wanting to miss a single second of the match and wanting to take advantage of all the money I'm spending on technology. I put the game on my phone as I went to the kitchen. Lo and behold, the game was about a full minute or two ahead of where I was on my Apple TV. Thanks for taking the time to read my email. Keep up the good work. I've noticed this, Kartik, sometimes where it's you mean sometimes I'll watch it through my Roku stick and I'll be watching a game and then I'm like, okay, I got to take a picture of something. So I'll go ahead and log in on my laptop, and the laptop's like 2 minutes ahead of the game that's on the same game that's on Roku. I think part of it's technology, where you mean with the Roku app and whichever streaming service you're using, ESPN Plus as one example. The how quickly that can actually go ahead and stream that game versus the laptop, which is going through a different connection. You might be able to actually have a faster speed to process that information to actually display that. But what about you, Kartik? Has this happened to you a bunch of times?
Yes, it has. Actually, that specific thing has happened where I think I put it on my laptop, he said the phone, but I've been on Apple TV watching something on ESPN Plus. I fired up my laptop because I'm moving somewhere else in the house, but I keep the thing streaming on Apple TV and I'm a minute ahead suddenly on the laptop. And so it has happened. In fact, I want to say it happened with a Bundesliga game, maybe not this past week, but the previous week, where I was watching it on Apple TV, ESPN Plus app on Apple TV, and then I did it on the computer, went through the website on the computer, fired it up, and I was a minute ahead.
Yeah, and the other part of that, too, is that oftentimes is that the app might be buffering the video. So, for example, if it is a game that's on your Roku streaming stick and you're wanting to watch it, you click it to view it, it's buffering, maybe it's, I don't know, 10, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, maybe a minute or so ahead of time. So it's continually pulling in that information as you're watching it. And you don't notice it when you're watching the game unless you see it buffering. Of course, buffering will cause it to slow down, but oftentimes these days I don't see a lot of buffering when I'm watching games. It's rare that I get any buffering these days. So so I mean, the hat's off to the technology, but I mean the internet speed's good. So thankfully, I haven't had too much of that. I know you can't take it right with AT&T. UVerse get buffering for now and again, or no?
Yes. A lot. So not as much with ESPN Plus. It's been happening with Peacock all the time. That was one of the NBC things I had written down to talk about this week, but we got into an analysis and Tim Howard and Rebecca Lowe and that stuff. But it happened twice on Saturday to me, where I had problems with Peacock because of buffering and because of internet speeds, and where I'd actually lose the picture. With ESPN Plus, it happens less. But maybe it's just random, right? Maybe it's just bad luck. It happened with Peacock twice in the same weekend in two different matches.
Yeah, there's a lot going on behind the scenes too, because I think sometimes you have certain companies throttling how much bandwidth. So Peacock might be one where, it's Comcast. Well, for me, it's Comcast. So so for me, it comes through, it doesn't buffer at all. Hardly ever, but with AT&T might be like, all right, let's not give this guy too much bandwidth on the Peacock. Let's give him kind of a rough experience so that he'll go ahead and sign up for HBO Max and fall in love with it.
Right.
I mean, behind the scenes, there is some of that, though. That does happen for sure.
Because they haven't messed with, now I would think they'd want to mess with Disney also, but they haven't really messed with the Disney Plus or the ESPN Plus, I've noticed.
Hey,
but
nobody messes with Disney. I mean, you don't go down that
Peacock
path.
Peacock, they have. No, that's a very good point. And I think this was the concern all along about back in the days when Time Warner Cable controlled so much of the country, and that's now obviously a part of AT&T, but that they would be selective. Oh, well, they wouldn't want, and then Comcast bought NBC. Oh, they wouldn't want the NBC channels on Time Warner, that sort of thing. And there's always been this undertone of some of these media wars that are going on. And as these media companies grow bigger and bigger and they control more of your lives, there's probably more of this that's going to happen.
So one thing we didn't get to, speaking of controlling our lives, Kartik, and actually I mentioned it at the opening of the show, and we should definitely talk about it because we mentioned it, is we talked about the World Cup qualifiers and we talked about CONMEBOL and these games. So these games, by the time you listen to this podcast, it'll be Thursday, and the games kick off on Thursday and they go into round one, round two. So for the next 10 days or so, just the CONMEBOL games, World Cup qualifiers, all of them are on pay-per-view. All of them are $29.99, and unless you do a package, except for one game, which is Venezuela against Paraguay, which is live on beIN Sports Extra, which is their free streaming channel. But it made me wonder, Kartik, it made me think, in previous years, beIN Sports had most of the rights to the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers. So if it was Argentina against Brazil, if it was, I mean, Colombia against Ecuador, whoever it may be, most of those games were on beIN Sports. Now, the qualifiers for the CONCACAF World Cup region, a lot of those games, not most, but a lot of those games also were on beIN Sports. So you'd have Honduras against USA. You mean you'd have TNT against USA. You'd have different games. Oftentimes the away games, the home games for the US would be on ESPN or Fox. What's the likelihood? I mean, I guess this is kind of a conjecture, but what's the likelihood that we're going to see a lot of these CONCACAF games on pay-per-view? I mean, the $29.95 to watch a USA against Costa Rica away game in the near future. What do you think about that?
I think it's a distinct possibility that happens. I think CONCACAF at some point will be very aggressive in maybe buying back rights and packaging their rights together. They've obviously been a little more decentralized with that in the past, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very strong possibility. And in the U.S., it could be a gold mine because of the need of certain ethnic populations to watch their national teams. Now, I don't think this will ever fly with the United States or Mexico, but it probably will fly with the other, with everybody else in the Confederation.
I can see it happening, though, with the U.S. games and Mexico games. Imagine a Mexico away game. Well, actually, Mexico, they're so tied in with Univision. and to the NA that if they weren't able to work out a deal, I'm sure Telemundo would happily come in to rescue it, to have it on television. So it's a lot more competitive there. But the US, I could see some of these away matches where the pay-per-view providers go in and say, hey, let's try and get these rights. This is a great opportunity to make a ton of money. Yes, it's one of those things. The pay-per-view industry is, I mean, it's going back in time. This feels like we're going back into the 1990s. But the reality is out of an audience of 100% of people that would be interested in seeing this game, maybe only 10% of them would actually be willing to pay to watch in pay-per-view. But that 10% would probably more than make enough money of what they're needing to in order to break even or make a profit there. So yeah, Kartik, I can see that happening. I can see a lot of these games, not a lot, a few of these games at least, being on pay-per-view, which imagine the backlash that would be happening at that point. I mean, we've got people screaming and having boycotts of Peacock at $5 a month. Imagine a game, one game, $29.95, and US fans just going, you mean, off a cliff on that one. I can see it happening. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. These games won't be until next year, but one to keep an eye out for. Just a couple more things too, real fast, Kartik, before we wrap up, is that in terms of games to watch during the international break, for me, I know you mentioned NWSL. There's, I think, Sky Blues playing Chicago on Saturday on CBS All Access. For me personally, it would be England against Wales. I mean, this is a friendly, but when England plays Wales, it's never a friendly. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this one and seeing how Wales competes against England on this stage, even though there'll be a bunch of players missing. But it still matters a lot to everyone in England and Wales, probably Wales more than England on that one. And that's about it. So listeners, if you do have any questions, feedback, opinions for us, do get in touch with us. We'd love to read those out on air. You can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And don't forget, every episode is on every Thursday across all of your podcast players. And Kartik, heading into another weekend, a weekend of international break boycott on your part, but definitely full of NWSL and probably a whole bunch of other games too, I'm sure. And for me, an international break full of hopefully some exciting games, I'm hoping. But definitely the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers, I'm looking forward to watching. Kartik, what should he do?
Enjoy your football.
That's better.